Welcome to Life Matters across the nation. Natasha Mitchell, pleased to be joining you on ABC RN. Now, did your school band sound something like this? Oh God, bail out, kids. Bail out now while you can. Yes, hopefully they had some potential. Richard Gill, did your school band sound like that?
Never. Never sounded like that.
Margie Moore? Oh, I was lucky I played in a recorder ensemble and it didn't sound like that. Bet you it didn't sound so good. Frère Jacques en masse.
No, we had a very sophisticated recorder ensemble with every instrument.
Did
it was beautiful.
You?
Mm, at a public school.
Randy?
We weren't lucky enough to have a school band where I went.
You're hearing the voices of Richard Gill, Margie Moore, Randy Glazer. We're going to introduce them all in a moment. But what we want to talk about today is music education. When you think about what classes are most important to a child's school education, what comes to mind for you? Maths, science, English, history, they might all make the list. Is music there on your list? Music education, do you see it as a priority? Or in an already jam-packed curriculum, should it be more of an optional extra? Maybe you saw it as the fun bludge lesson. Music teachers across Australia are lamenting the loss of a fulsome music curriculum in many schools. What's at stake, do you think, if music education disappears from schools? Do you look back now as an adult and wish you'd done more music? Or were music classes at school something you dreaded? What are your memories? Share them with us today. And if you've got kids yourself, have you made music education a priority or has it in fact been quite hard to access? We're taking your calls this morning on music education, its state, and what you think it should be in Australia, what we could be doing differently or better. 1300 22 55 76, that's 1300, call RN. Or SMS us 0418 226 576 or tweet us at RN Life Matters. That live number again, 1300 22 5576. If you're in WA, our listener feedback line 0283 1430. Yes, we have with us in the studio internationally renowned conductor and passionate music educator Richard Gill, who argues that music should be at the top of the food chain. And
correct.
Richard has also just taken up an important role as music director of the Sydney Chamber Choir, celebrating 40 years this year, and we'll give you a flavour of their beautiful voices this hour. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Natasha.
Great to be here. Good to have you back. Margie Moore is with us, and you might know her name. She's involved with an initiative called Music Count Us In, where kids en masse sing one song across Australia. It's happening in October.
That's right, the 29th.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And we've got Randy Glazer with us too. He's a youth support worker at Street University in Mount Druitt in Sydney, working with young people, well, after school, outside of the formal classroom.
Yes, indeed.
Instead of inside the classroom. Well, it's a particular type of classroom, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, a lot of people that we work with have left school, so they're not in school altogether, and we're trying to get them back into school.
Music is the hook. Welcome to the show.
Exactly. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I do actually want to know a bit more about your early experiences of school education, Richard, and music education in particular.
Yeah, I started school at a Catholic school in the bad old days at the end of World War II, where there was still a Latin mass, and we learnt Gregorian chant by rote. And that was the thing that hooked me forever on music, because once we'd learned to sing some Gregorian chant, and then we went to Mass and we had the bells and smells and the incense and the whole box and dice, I was hooked. It was theatre with unbelievable singing. And then later on we sang a lot of motets, Renaissance motets. That just cemented it for me. So although we had no formal music education, there was an enormous amount of singing. And that was the thing that attracted me to music.
Glorious. Does that sound anything like your music education in Brooklyn, New York, Randy?
Funnily enough, it's actually, it does possess some similarities. We were given an option for most of my schooling to either do band or dance drama. So I kind of went the dance drama way. And was involved in the chorus and stuff like that. So there was a lot of theatrical productions. I remember we did an ode to Irving Berlin and did all his music. But some kids went the band route, and I kind of wish I did that as well.
I wish I'd learnt guitar. That's my great regret in life.
Piano.
Piano is too late. I don't know that it's too late.
It's not too late, Natasha.
Never too late.
What about you, Maggie? There was the recorder ensemble.
At a public school. I was very lucky. And it also had a fantastic choir. And then I went to a public high school, which also had a very rich music program. So again, I was very lucky. And I know that that is the case. I came from a family where music was very important. My dad was a musician and he encouraged us all to learn instruments. But I know that there are kids out there who haven't had that opportunity. And I work with kids in the northwest of New South Wales who don't have they don't have teachers. They travel 200 miles to even go to some sort of music experience. So it's really, music is a really important part of people's lives, and I know it's been a huge important part of mine.
So you keep saying, making the point, I had a great music program in a public school. Now, what are you responding to there when you make a point of saying that?
There are statistics that say that 23% of public schools offer music programs, while 88% of private schools offer them. So, kids are much more likely to get a well-rounded music program in a private school, but I was just one of the lucky ones. I think it could have been postcode.
How do you see the state of music education now in Australia, Richard Gill? 10 years ago, there was a massive review of music education. I had a look through that document. Are the issues still as ripe 10 years on?
They are. Regrettably, they are. But we are doing things about it. I think what's interesting about music education, pardon me, Maggie's point about the public versus the private sector. The thing is that there's no reason to think that kids in public schools are any less smarter or musically defective. I mean, kids are the same no matter where they are in the world. The 2004 review revealed an enormous amount about music education and the lack of it in the state system. And what we're doing at the moment to address that is through the National Mentoring Program, which we have started in New South Wales, Western Australia and Victoria.
Who's mentoring who?
Right. We have in our primary schools, state primary schools, we have a mentor teacher who is music trained working with classroom teachers on a 1-to-4 ratio. So one mentor is working with 4 classroom teachers. And we're already getting data back from that program. And the wonderful things are the kids are starting to enjoy music. They're really enjoying the music. The classroom teachers are seeing what they're able to do and they're being surprised at what they can do.
This is a pilot.
And so far, so good. We've got one in the south as well in Bermagui. The people down in Bermagui at Four Winds have done amazing work with mentoring. And it's just started in WA and about to start in Victoria. So we're gathering evidence about the way a mentor works with classroom teachers.
Because 10 years ago, a report found that Australian students could complete 13 years of education, 13 years of education without participating in any form of music education.
Correct.
How desperate is that situation?
It's frightful because music, in my view, this will not come as a surprise, Natasha, music should underpin the curriculum. The two things that should be bookending the curriculum are music and physical activity, sport, gymnastics and that sort of thing. And if they bookend the curriculum, everything else falls into place in a child's learning.
Why do you think they should? Why do you place so much value, other than being totally biased, on the benefits of music education in particular, at the expense perhaps of other priorities in the curriculum that exist?
Okay, the big thing about music is, in order to understand it, you have to listen, and that business of listening requires focus and concentration. And when you start to listen at a very high level, that sense of focus and concentration transforms the child's entire perception of all things learned, so that there's a fantastic bonus in teaching music. Now, I want to make a really clear point here. We teach music because it's good. Pardon me. We teach because it's good. But we can't deny that there are these fantastic bonuses associated with listening. And this listening and this focusing and this concentration transfers to all other areas of learning.
Let's take some calls. Michelle in New South Wales, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning.
What's your daughter's experience?
My daughter is 10 years old and she goes to our local one teacher school. We're just south of Four Winds at Bermagui in a place called Tanja. And we have 1.5 teachers. We're actually not involved in the Four Winds project yet, but that may come. Mm. We have, my understanding as part of our local PNC is that music in the state schools is not necessarily a part of the curriculum, or it is not part of, doesn't have to be part of the curriculum. Mm. However, our principal brings in a music teacher and we raise funds so that music teacher can stay on longer. And our children, there's 25 this year. We're losing 10 to high school, so we'll have about 18 next year. But they all learn musical instruments and they sing in a choir.
So why you as a school community, as parents, have you decided to give priority to supporting the school music program?
I just think we see the value in the music, the enjoyment the children get out of. And personally, for my daughter, with reading, until she started to learn the piano and learn to read music, she was struggling with her actual reading. Mm. And it's another language in as far as I feel and I've been told. And it's just clicked with her actual academic work. And the enjoyment. We're just getting ready for a big play tonight. You know, there's 25 children and singing is such a wonderful a part of our school, and they're doing plays and drama today. But we're a public school in a municipality. We don't even have... We've got 2 art galleries but no shops. It's the most wonderful place in the world, just south of Four Winds.
Okay, we're all moving there. Yeah. We're all convinced.
have a great...
Have a great concert tonight. Thanks for calling in. That cross-fertilisation, Randy, of skills.
It's quite funny that she mentioned that, because that's what I was thinking when you were talking about bookending the curriculum with music. And something that we do at North Street Uni is we use music as a broader topic to hook people in. But within music, we're teaching them English skills. We're teaching them reading, writing, teaching them about similes and metaphors and all that kind of stuff. Mm. We're also teaching people music business skills, marketing, promotion. There's so much that comes with teaching people music, you know, beyond just teaching them an instrument.
When kids walk into the Street Uni space, what do they bring into that room? What's their situation?
Oh, there's a variety of situations that come in. So we might get kids. I mean, you know, we're in what is considered to be some of the rougher areas in Sydney and now within Queensland and Canberra. And you'll get some kids in there who are straight from juvenile detention. You'll get some kids in there who are in the system. And then you'll get some kids in there who have great parents who go to church every Sunday. And, you know, there's such extremes and we all kind of come together, you know. And I think everybody comes up there for a reason. So even the people that might seem like they're on this great path and have everything, you know, great parents that have a beautiful house and all that, there's something else going on there that they need music to express themselves and get away a little bit.
So what does music do? How does it hook into their hearts and souls?
I mean, I can speak for myself and what I see in them. You know, music is such a strong piece of a child's upbringing. You know, it really is how they define themselves.
Richard Gill.
What I think it's really interesting to hear Randy talk like this, because what he's really saying is that music socializes, that the kids feel a sense of belonging, yep. They feel a sense of community, and kids who may be diametrically opposed on all sorts of other issues will come together in a choir and sing. And all of those issues that have occupied them outside are then forgotten as they sing or they make music together or they play music together. And music has this wonderful capacity to bind people together.
I'll come back. Oh, Margie,
yeah,
yes.
Also, I think it bring...
And that's the point of Music mm-hmm. Count Us In, isn't it? This initiative that actually binds kids
across Australia.
Australia.
Yeah. I mean, it's a simple idea. One song, one day, everybody involved. But it does have a lot of other layers in that they have teacher professional development and opportunity for kids to learn instruments that they'll play along with. And it's an opportunity for a school to really get behind, like the school south of the Four Winds community, and do something that brings those students together. And I think the area of engagement is really, really vital in this. Engaging kids in their learning is one of the hardest things to do. And from my perspective, and I'm sure I speak for Randy and Richard here, music is the way in.
Yes, I'll come back on that point. We've got a full board, so I'll get to some calls. But often music education can be a bit turgid as well. And so let's dissect the state of what exists so far in a moment. On Life Matters on ABC RN, Natasha Mitchell with you, with Richard Gill, internationally renowned conductor, Margie Moore, who runs Music Count Us In, and Randy Glazer, who runs, is a youth support worker with Street University in Mount Druitt in Sydney. And you, we're talking about the state of music education in Australia. Does music education matter to you, your children? What was your experience of it? 1300 225 76. Kyle in Orange, you teach at the Orange Conservatorium.
Yes, Natasha, thanks so much for having me on. What a panel. I'm a huge fanboy of yours, Richard, and that's an amazing panel you have here, and thanks for raising this topic today.
Excellent. What would you like to add about music education from your experience?
I think from my experience as 20 years of playing music largely by ear, it's an interesting aspect of what we do as teachers and as students, and it quite often gets lost in the noise. I guess I want to know where this is going in our modern world. To sum it up, I had a kid come to me recently, and he's one of my newest students, and he walked into the studio on the first day, and I said, well, you know, show me what you can do. He's about 16. He just started playing and singing beautifully, and blew me away. And I said, that's great, mate. All right, let's start with what chords are you playing? And he went, I don't know. he had no idea what middle C was. And yet he'd learned from the internet to sing and play a modern hit almost perfectly.
And so did you teach him middle C? Was that important to do you think?
Interestingly, I'm the guy at the camp. We've got five beautiful, amazing women that teach at the Orange Roof. I kind of know Richard's been there and would know some of them. They teach classical, and I'm the comic relief. I'm the contemporary teacher, and my reading is shocking, and it always has been. It's actually a really interesting, I won't get too much into my personal experience, but I've made a career out of reading by ear. I'm a half-decent chord reader. Yeah. I just do not get the dots, and I have tried and I've spent time on it. My brain doesn't work that way, and yet I can hear a piece of music and play it.
Look, thanks so much for the call. I'd like to come back to the panel on that. Can I just take a few more calls so we can keep them moving through? Thanks, Kyle. Anita in Lismore, lots of people calling from regional New South Wales today. Good morning.
Good morning, Natasha.
Well, you're the executive director of a regional conservatorium.
I am. I'm in the same network as Kyle from Orange, and I know Richard's aware of our network, and my experience as a child was fantastic. I had an amazing music teacher, Wendy Peterson, but she actually was Wendy Denham. That was her maiden name, and she was just brilliant. So she set me up incredibly well, and I credit Wendy for setting me on a really, really great path with my music education. Loads of singing, so much singing, and it was really, really incredible.
It's often one person, one key person. I've got a great mate who, Richard Gill, kind of influenced in a big way in his early musical pathway as well. But you'd like to make a point about music education helping kids who are challenged.
Yes. So, I mean, I believe that music education, I mean, is great for everybody. But the kids that I've seen that have really, really touched my heart over the years in my work are the kids who come in and they have no self-confidence and they have no social skills. And you see them after a few years and they're mixing at, you know, holiday music camps with kids that they've never met before. They're actually able to speak in public. They walk with a sense of pride and achievement. And I just think that music education is so important for all the reasons that it you know, can help you in all the other areas of curriculum, but also it provides students with another opportunity for them to have an experience of themselves as someone who has achieved something and as someone who is successful and someone who can share that gift with other like-minded people. And in my work, I get to see all kinds of incredibly talented young musicians.
Great. Anita, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Randy, that's your experience. Should we hear a little bit of the Street Uni All-Stars, if we can? Let's hear Passing On, I think. Is that, it's called Passing On?
Yeah, I do believe we're going to play Passing On, the 26-letter remix, which dropped earlier last year, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, great track. We did a workshop around grieving and loss, because one of the kids had recently lost an uncle and somebody had lost a close friend. So we had this workshop just talking about how to deal with loss and different ways that it's affected each of us. And then at the end of the workshop, we came up with a track, and this was done in probably about 5 hours.
Let's hear it.
I'm sick of living like every day's a mission, just wishing that people in it would step up and make a difference. Why don't they listen? People dying every day. How many funerals do we have to attend to make a change? But that's just life. I lost my homie last year. Rest in peace, Khalil. Your homie's still crying lonely tears. But we just soldier on, cause life seems to go on, even when the people we love dearly has up and gone. But I'm a man now. My mama taught me right. She taught me God has a reason, so living always fight. But it's so hard living as an only son, watching friends and family live and die and pass on. But like a novel, every day's another chapter. So rest in peace to the fall, and I'll see you in a life after. And though it ain't the same and people pass away, I promise I'll see you again on a brighter day.
I still remember first time we met the soldier on. Until I seen your change since you lost your love. Oh, well, that's cool, cause I've been this in the guess it happened quick. But that's the one that God chose, he wanted to kick it with. Mama, I got your back through the thick and the thin. You're the queen of my heart, but offer comes from within. Seeing my mama cries, eyes blurred, vision nasal. God, I pray to be my grandmother back as an angel.
Now if you wanna say something, then say it.
This is a vehicle for talking about difficult stuff in these young people's lives outside of the classroom.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so they're coming to us not because they have to come to us, because they want to come to us. And they're sitting down with us every week and discussing, you know, big issues about domestic violence and drug abuse and alcohol abuse and all different kinds of stuff. And we're creating music to kind of as a way to deal with these issues.
What do you think has been their experience of music education? In schools, formal music education.
It's a bit varied. Some people have never touched an instrument, have never been to a music classroom, and others have kind of sourced it out. So they've made the effort to find some stuff in their school. I guess it's pretty optional. You know, I didn't go to school in Australia, so I don't really know how the public system works here. But at our school, it was kind of optional back home in New York, and I'm guessing it's the same here.
Yeah, Margie Moore, Music Counters In was a response to what was perceived to be a big problem with music education today, wasn't it?
Yes, well, it came out of the review that Richard was talking about before, and it was one sort of solution to get everybody involved and to also raise the profile of music education and to get kids involved in writing their own music, which is what they do every year for the song that they sing. It's written by young people. But I think, you know, it's really more of an advocacy tool as well as a professional development tool. And the sort of stuff that Randy's doing and other programs that are offered to students are really vital to support that as well. Mm. And I think the important thing is that kids have a go, have an opportunity. And the idea of writing your own music is so important because, you know, if they are really thinking about trying to express themselves and to come up with a way of solving problems and issues in their own lives, music is the best way to do that. Well,
some of these people that we work with, the young people, have nobody to talk to. They're not talking to their parents. They're not talking to school counselors. They're not talking to their teachers. They're not even talking to the counselors that we offer sometimes. The only way that they get this out is on paper and in the recording booth.
Okay, but the thing is, that's a program that's sort of attached to the curriculum. It's not embedded in the curriculum. So let's take us inside the actual existing music curriculum, where it happens to exist in state or private independent education in Australia. And its approach, who's teaching it? Specialist music teachers?
In Queensland, absolutely. Queensland is the leader in particularly primary music education in Australia and has been for a long time. They have specialist teachers. They have specialist classroom teachers and specialist instrumental teachers. In New South Wales, it's mandatory. New South Wales is still following the Board of Studies, so there's no national curriculum yet in New South Wales. Western Australia, South Australia, Tasmania, Northern Territory are adopting and adapting. So ideally, every child in the country should have music. But what's happening is something Randy said right at the beginning of the program. You can, a lot of principals will opt for something. They'll say, look, we're going to do dance and drama. They're our art subjects, so you choose one. And the kid mightn't get any music. So my feeling is that that's not a great way to go. That all the
arts... It's either or.
Yeah, yeah. And the kids should have everything, and it's not too, it's really not too hard. The curriculum is crowded with a lot of stuff that has nothing to do with education, whereas arts education actually has a massive impact on thinking. And what we want to produce is kids who can think, who can learn how to learn and learn how to think. And arts education does that, particularly music education. So,
do you need to be a specialist music teacher to pull off a good music class in primary or high school?
Ultimately. Yeah. My view is ultimately, yes, you've got to know something about what you're doing. You can, classroom teachers can do an enormous amount. And I've seen that over years and years, and Margie will testify to that. We've seen classroom teachers do amazing things. And some classroom teachers have the capacity to be specialist. And I would use myself as an example. I could teach elementary arithmetic. I can teach counting up to 10. I can do a bit of add up and take away.
Add a push, you could probably get to 100, Richard Gill.
I'd probably get to 100, but look. But beyond that, I'm not a mathematics teacher. I'm not a science teacher. And no amount of teaching me is going to make me that.
Okay, so I want to come back to the question of what actually gets taught and what genres of music get taught in the classroom next. But it's full board, so let's take some calls. And lots of text messages coming in. I'm hoping to get to a few of those too. Ken in Melbourne, good morning to you. When you were at school, visiting musicians swung by.
Mm-hmm. They did indeed. We were very fortunate. This is... we had the formal music classes, which weren't particularly great in the tech school I was at, but I got exposed to some absolutely fabulous itinerant musicians. I was taught clarinet by Ade Monsborough, which people might know as a jazz musician who passed away about 2006. But Ade was absolutely brilliant, and I know a lot of young people in our school who went on and made professional careers in as working musicians and learning the craft from musos.
What a privilege, what a treat to have so early on in your life.
Yes.
Thank you so much for the call, Ken. Very much. We've got Daniel in Box Hill in Melbourne as well.
Good morning, Sasha.
Yeah, what would you like to say about music in the curriculum?
I'd just like to say that I'm actually studying a bachelor degree in music right now and looking to do a master's of education into the future. And I just think it's completely vital. It revitalized my love of education when I was studying at high school 2 years ago. And I think it's no doubt the studies are in that music... through creativity and through concentration, as we've already heard from the panel, is completely vital for the curriculum and for students in the early stages of learning.
And it's interesting that you want to, not only are you training as a musician, but you really want to go back into the classroom as an educator.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I always thought that I would be in education throughout my high school years, but I didn't realise that music was such a passion of mine until I was... about 17,
right.
And then realised that I really wanted to combine the two, and I thought definitely that I would do a Bachelor in Music and really learn as much as I could about music, even though I might not need to apply that in the high school classroom, but I thought I'd need to push myself as far as I can to be able to pass on that information as well.
Enjoy the rest of the adventures. Thanks for calling us today.
Thank you.
And we have Carmen in Sydney. Your son goes to Glebe Primary School or went to Glebe Primary School, and what happened musically?
Oh, he does go. Yep, he's in year three. So I think the past 3 years, a music teacher has been funded partly through the PNC and partly through a very scrupulous number-crunching principal to fund a full-time music teacher. So he has been in place now, I think, for 2 years, and another music teacher went on maternity leave.
So that, one shrewd principal.
She is. She very much is. And he's there full time, so it means all the year groups from kindy to year six are accessing him as a teacher. We also have guitar club at school, and there is a choir. So I'm agreeing on so many points with the panel that you have. It's fabulous. It's a great discussion. It's the fact that the PNC have to, well, the fact that they're on board is incredible, but the fact that we are partly funding it is, you know, it's gives an indication of a mildly sorry state of affairs, that it's not actually inbuilt into the curriculum and it's funded. But we have an amazing principal who sees the value of it all.
Mm. Thanks for the call, and good luck for your little one. Margie?
I think the culture of a school can really be changed by having an active music program and wonderful music teachers like the ones who've just been ringing in.
The whole culture of a school?
Yeah, I think it can.
In what way?
Well, it's interesting. I used to be a music consultant, and I would walk into a school and I could almost tell from when I walked in the gate whether or not a school was a positive place or not. Mm. And if you could see kids singing and playing and doing things in the classroom and also in the playground that were active and not, you know, involved in making music, but also involved in physical sorts of things. But it just changes the culture in a positive way, that there is people putting things together, they're putting on performances, you've got parent support, you've got teachers involved, you've got community support, and the children themselves, I think, feel that sense of self-confidence and resilience that's being built through those sorts of programs.
In a jam-packed curriculum, though, it's very difficult for schools, for education departments to work out what to prioritise. And for some reason, music hasn't been given the priority.
No,
it hasn't. You can understand what they're wrestling with. A whole lot of other competing needs and desires and vital priorities. Do we throw out maths and English and history and psychology and philosophy? And what do we throw out?
We don't throw anything out if we start with music. Because what happens when we start with music, if we have very young children singing nursery rhymes, playing games, learning lots of songs, and we're not talking about big expensive instruments at the beginning of a music education. We're talking about the idea that if you get children singing, and if you get the brain and the mind active, that's going to have a fantastic impact on everything they do. That's a bonus, remember, we're talking about a bonus. So this type of activity, if we have a curriculum singing base where they learn to read and write music from singing, we heard the caller talk about how it had such an impact on her daughter once she started learning the piano. So we don't have to turf anything out of the curriculum. We just have to prioritise it and say that if you introduce children to an imaginative world early in their lives, all of that imagination and stimulation and listening and abstraction has a powerful impact on the way they think about everything.
Maybe we need to start singing our history classes at school. But the thing is, often music classes were associated with the tedium of rote learning of scales.
Well,
and all sitting in a row, staring at the teacher.
Doing worksheets.
Boring as bat shite.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that still goes on in some places where kids sit there and do worksheets and fill in note names, you know. How many words can you make from the treble clef? That has nothing to do with music. Music is about sound. Music's all about the sorts of things that Randy and Margie are talking about. Music counterseat is about awareness, raising awareness of singing. Randy's talking about kids making music. Mm. So the idea that we have to clear out the curriculum is really, we've got to get rid of the extraneous stuff in the curriculum and go back to teaching things seriously, beginning with music and arts education.
Serious doesn't necessarily mean
it's not fun.
Yeah.
Serious is fun.
Like because often, even in any type of class context, any subject, kids aren't really necessarily exploring the imaginative potential. They're not coming up with their own content. They're learning existing content. How vital is it in music class to be making up your own musical output?
It's why we teach music. We teach music so children can make their own music. And when they're put in the circumstance of making their own music, they understand how all other music works. Because if you ask a child to write a song, then they've got to know something about songwriting. And they've got to be able to listen to songs and make judgments and make comparisons and discriminate. It's a powerful way of teaching. So that's why we do it, so they can make their own music.
Let's hear a little bit of Music Counters In, the spectacle that happens. Now, I think this is called Gold Kids.
Yes.
Which is?
It's the latest song.
The latest song. And so this was performed, song that got performed.
It will be performed on the 29th of October.
Across the nation.
Yes.
In all the schools that participate at the same time.
That's right.
Let's hear it. Okay, Margie, so the key here was that this was written and produced by kids.
That's right, yes. And I think that's really vital, that they had a role in making that piece of music come together and also a role in how it was structured. And obviously, you know, it's a particular genre and I feel, and I'm sure Richard would agree with me and Randy as well, that kids should be exposed to all types of music.
Yeah.
This is only one kind. But it is an opportunity for kids to come together and sing a song that they've enjoy because it's fun, and it's something that has come from students themselves, and it will be a celebration on that day.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will mean that students and teachers and communities and parents in schools will see the value of music and
I'd like to
expand on that.
I'd like to hear them getting a little heavier and taking a few, a bit of inspiration from Metallica and, you know,
right.
But that's my personal taste.
We've got a way to go.
We've got a full board. Let me try and get to some calls and text messages. John in beautiful Nimbin, good morning, 78, and music is inside you. Have we got you, John? Have we got you? We haven't got John. Let's go to Lisa in Hobart. Good morning. Good. Now, you're a clinical psychologist and you were a bassoonist in the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra.
That's right. I've been in Australia about 33 years and I came out to play in the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra. I updated my qualifications in psychology. I was doing that part-time, kind of instead of teaching the bassoon. But in the last 3 years, I had to stop playing the bassoon because it was getting too physically painful. So now I'm a full-time clinical psychologist. And I often think about how having been a musician has really been the most important thing in being a good psychologist for a couple of reasons. On the surface, it's because musicians are good at learning and unlearning skills and how useful that is as a psychologist for people, especially doing behavioral work. But I'm about to give a talk at a conference on obsessive compulsive disorder, and what I'm doing is integrating lots of different theory. And what I realize is that being a musician in an ensemble is about really being good at a high level integration, because you've got so many things that you need to pay attention to. So that any child who's learning music and playing in ensembles in school has to integrate, you know, maybe watching the conductor, listening to other musicians, being aware of their own rhythm, intonation, phrasing, being aware of other people. So it's something that I'm coming to realize more and more, that my ability to integrate knowledge as a psychologist has come from doing that as a musician for so many years. So it would be the most incredible mistake in the world to not introduce a child to music for that very reason.
Gee, I love your call, because it just explains that integration, that cross-fertilization between music and all the other cognitive skills that we need to develop in our lives is well, there it is in your example. Thanks, Lisa.
You're very welcome.
We'll read a couple of texts out, because they're long and they're essay-like, because such is your passion and your thumbs will wear out. Isabel writes, as a non-musician but passionate music lover, I lament the lack of inclusiveness of music in today's public curriculum. Music is everything. Maths, English, languages, science. Using music to teach these subjects. Oh, I've just lost the screen. Hang on. I'm getting the screen back. Hang on a tick. Here we are. Sorry about that. Using music to teach these subjects would see a new generation of invigorated, stimulated and lateral fingers. My 18-month-year-old identical twins have been using musical instruments since they were 6 months. And every day now they seek out the music box with a large range of instruments to let me know they would like to listen to the music to their music. It's a visual sheer pleasure to watch them. Pete writes, "My great regret is never to have learnt music. My grandmother was a pianist and I never pursued that. I tried to learn sax at school, but the teacher had an unfortunate stutter." And he goes on, "Every second word, and I was thrown out of the choir for being late to rehearsal. If I could go back, I would." That's from Pete. And Dame Jevu on Twitter writes, "Serious music education nearly killed my love of playing piano. I now play for my own pleasure. No scales." Richard Gill, no scales. Edith in Tasmania, good morning. Have we got you, Edith?
Yes, good morning.
Now, you've taken up an instrument at age 70.
I have.
Which is?
Which is taiko drumming. Taiko actually in Japanese does mean a big drum, and it's drumming in Japan is used at arts festivals and so on. And I first saw my first taiko drum performance I saw in 2002. It was the University of Tasmania group that that were doing it, and I said to my husband, "My God, I'd really love to do that." And I saw several performances over the years, and when I retired, I decided, that's it, I'm going to do this. I just, it was meant to be, I think, because I saw a little ad in the community paper that said beginner's taiko classes, and that was, over 2 years ago now, or over a year and a half ago, I should say it was. And I decided to do it. I absolutely love it.
Yes.
And I'm good enough to be performing now as well occasionally.
Fabulous. Great. Margie, thank you for the call. Margie.
You're welcome.
I think taiko drumming is incredible. We have a partnership with Taikos, the taiko drumming group, amazing taiko drumming group that's centred in Sydney. And they work with us up in the northwest of New South Wales with the regional indigenous and amazing children up there that I'm a part of with the Murrumbilla Project. They've worked with us for 9 years now. And every year the kids put together a huge taiko and fan dance that goes for about 23 minutes that Taiko's people teach them.
Precisely 23 minutes.
And it's just the discipline and the extraordinary ability and focus that it creates in the kids is incredible.
Chris in Melbourne, good morning.
Hello there, how are you?
Now, I'm good. Now, you work with kids and get them to write their own songs.
Yes, I've been doing that probably most of my 50s. Well, I'm in my late 60s now, and I think just music is just the path to literacy, because once you get kids inviting children to tell their story through songwriting and then using your voice to sing and then being able to record those songs back, and then it goes even further. You can take that into another artistic pursuit where you can get young people to illustrate their own music, all their lyrics, and write their own books. So there's so many things you can do with the power of music.
You're working particularly in Indigenous communities.
I've been doing that for quite a long time. But when I first started teaching in the late 70s, I just took my guitar into the classroom. And we would just start by you know, using my guitar and talking and making up things. And that was the best way to really engage young children, I felt, and I've just continued that through the whole of my teaching life, and still really passionate about working like that.
Chris, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Maybe we might keep you on the line as well, and we'll grab your number. Roger in Benalla, a retired secondary music teacher with some strong feelings about how music education was treated in the state of Victoria.
Oh, relatively strong feelings, yeah. No, when I first came to Victoria, from training in Newcastle, they didn't have, and they still don't really have, strong presence of music in the classroom curriculum. It was all, a lot of it was an also ran, and it was electives at best, and they had a token band and a choir, but it's still better now, but not treated as a serious subject.
Yeah.
As you say, look, really, everything that's to be said on this, Richard Gill should say, listen to him. He knows what's going on. For its place in the general curriculum, we knew right from primary school that when we teach the kids the ABC, we teach them to sing it because it helps it stick.
Yeah.
There is also another aspect to this, that we do have a special department in our own brain which is devoted to music, which is not there for English and maths, or perhaps maths. But we naturally feel music. I mean, it's a way straight into the student to learn, you know, emotionally and otherwise. And it's the one thing that, that can combine all learning skills in one go.
Yes, thanks for the call, Roger, very much. Appreciate it. Does it matter, Randy, what sort of music gets taught in the classroom? Because you've sort of hit the pulse of interest with hip-hop.
Yeah. Well,
hip-hop's, I mean, always, as someone's just tweeted, Ian's just tweeted, love hearing Randy preaching the word of hip-hop. Hip-hop has always been about creating a positive impact, empowering youth.
It has been, and, you know, just a real big social message as well. Listen, I think we're very lucky in that we use hip-hop to engage our kids. But not all kids are into hip-hop.
No.
You know, there are going to be some that are into rock music. There are going to be some that love classical music. Mm. So and the beauty of hip-hop anyway
or might is, love it if you introduce it to them.
Exactly.
This is the thing.
The beauty of hip-hop, which we try and teach the kids, is it's not all about rap music. This culture was built on foundations of all different kinds of music. Mm. They were taking samples and loops from soul and funk and bebop and all, you know, whatever was out there, reggae. It's kind of a well-rounded culture when you teach it the right way and get it away from the MTV rap culture.
Yeah, why don't we have that sort of nuance, that exciting history in music education? Is it part of music curricula?
Well, it can be. It absolutely can be. And I think the
subculture history, that's exciting for kids.
It is exciting for kids. And I think that Margie made the point, and Randy certainly confirmed it, that kids should have access to a whole lot of music.
Yeah.
And it's not about trying to get them to prefer one type of music, but to have a love of all music for their entire lives and to have the wherewithal to appreciate all music. And then they can make choices. They can say, okay, I'm going to be a hip-hop person, or I'm going to be a rock person, or I'm going to be a jazz or what have you, or I'm going to like all of them because they've been exposed to them all. We shouldn't be limiting. We shouldn't be saying you can only have this sort of music, and often that happens. Teachers think they've got to love classical music or they'll get it wrong. That's not the way to teach music.
And it's also what happens in the family home, I think, is an issue here. A text message, Elizabeth, I grew up with music all around me, family gatherings where we all sung and danced, long Australian road trips with a cassette on repeat. In high school, I was in a specialist music program in Canberra, had a fantastic teacher. And I have two daughters and I've passed on my love to music to them. We sing and dance together all the time.
How beautiful.
And it is about what's happening at home in a way, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up with reggae, for example, and I reckon that was an access point to all sorts of genres of music.
Well, there is only two kinds of music. There's good music and bad music.
Oh, yeah, but what you think's good might not be what I think's good.
But I do, you know, if you just eat broccoli, well, that's a pretty boring diet. But if you get a chance to really smorgasbord any kind of music, then that's a rich and wonderful world.
Let's squeeze in a couple more calls. Wayne in Ultimo in New South Wales. You went to Mildura Tech in the 1960s.
I did, and it was our music class, and Miss Harvey, who ran it for many, many years, was a compulsory subject, and we had a school band, and I lament today that I haven't seen a high school or a tech school band for a long, long, long time, and our band was part of the Army Cadets. We used to do the Anzac Day March. We would compete in secondary school band competitions in Adelaide and in Melbourne. It was just an amazing time in my life, and I just could not imagine a school today without some sort of music involved in it.
Yeah, and thanks for naming the teachers. I love when people do that. I'll just squeeze in another call from Joy in Yass, 87, Music Through the Generations.
Yes, it's been absolutely a major part of my life. My aunties used to play the piano. We used to have musical evenings. Every time we went to visit relatives, it was always a sing around the piano. Mm. And my aunt used to accompany very high-class singers. This would have been during the First World War. And then I learnt music. I did it for my intermediate exam. I carried on with that and then started learning singing when I was 18. Absolutely loved it.
And you've passed it on because you've got 20 great-grandchildren.
I have got 20, four of my grandchildren earn their living 14 grandchildren, mind you.
From music. Four of your grandchildren.
Yeah. And they're living from music.
So it gets passed through the generations. Joy, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Right.
And final question to you all then. What should be our first priority in terms of music education and its state at present in Australia? Richard Gill.
Encouraging parents to sing to children or to introduce children to singing, nursery rhymes and stories as early as possible in their lives.
Margie Moore.
I think we need to give credit to the amazing teachers out there, and a few of them have been named today, but they are really the vital thing. If we can encourage teachers to really teach creatively and imaginatively using a variety of music and give them every opportunity to do that.
Randy Glaser.
I think give our children a voice. You know, I think that's what they're all crying for, is they want a voice.
Yeah. And music is a vehicle.
Exactly.
For doing just that. And look, thank you so much. Please keep this conversation going on our Facebook page, or you can ring our listener line if you're passionate and want to leave a message, 0283 1430. Thank you to Isabel Summerson today for producing today's talkback. And thank you to Richard Gill, conductor, music educator, incoming music director at the Sydney Chamber Choir. And thank you to Margie Moore, arts and education consultant. Thank you. And Randy Glaser, music facilitator at Street Uni at Mount Druitt. Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha.
And we want to take it away with, the very group that you've coming in to conduct, the Sydney Chamber Choir. This is The Mountain Chant by Ross Edwards.
Oh, beautiful.
Hearing the Sydney Chamber Choir. The choir's landmark 40th anniversary concert will be held this Sunday at the Great Hall at the University of Sydney at 3 p.m. And more information on the Life Matters website about that. And of course, it's now conducted by Richard Gill, one of our guests today in our conversation about music education. Please keep talking to us on our website. And Michael Cathcart is coming by next. And the creativity continues well into our lives.
I'm colouring in.
You are. There's this obsession with adult colouring books at the moment.
Normally I warm up and get all pumped for the show, but today I'm so calm because I'm sitting here, Natasha. I'm just colouring in. Look, I'm just so calm.
What are you actually colouring in?
I'm colouring in a mosque.
There you go. Yeah, good. So you're going to talk about colouring books.
Colouring in and how it makes adults calm.
You're regressing. Thanks, Michael. And thank you to the team, executive producer Stephen Turner, Scott Spart, Lindy Rain, Tracy Tromf, Isabel Summerson, and all of you. You have a great weekend.